Nehemiah chapter 1. I want to consider the first three verses of chapter 1 this morning in our opening message on this series. We'll just read them again together. Nehemiah chapter 1. We read the words of Nehemiah, the son of Hakaliah. And it came to pass in the month Chislu, in the 20th year, as I was in Shushan the palace, that Hanani, one of my brethren, came, he and certain men of Judah, and I asked them concerning the Jews that had escaped, which were left of the captivity, and concerning Jerusalem. And they said unto me, the remnant that are left of the captivity there in the province, you are in great affliction and reproach. The wall of Jerusalem also is broken down, and the gates thereof are burned with fire. Now, as you encounter this book, you're really taken into a pivotal time for the children of Israel. They had previously spent 70 years in captivity under the hard yoke of King Nebuchadnezzar. 2 Chronicles 36, verse 17, it mentions he, and that is King Nebuchadnezzar. King Nebuchadnezzar, as you read through that portion in 2 Chronicles 36, you discover that he was the king of Babylon. And he and his armies, they entered into Jerusalem and Judah, and they destroyed that place. They leveled the walls, they leveled the house of God, and they took the people of God back to his homeland, to Babylon, as captives. Now the place which once shone with the glory and presence of God, Jerusalem, the Lord's city, and the place which was house to the house of God, it now stood as no more than a levelled building site. But you find as you read through your Bible that the influence of Babylon under King Nebuchadnezzar, it gradually diminished. And it was replaced by the rise of the Persian Empire. And this Persian Empire, as it rose up, it spelled a new dawn and it bred new hope for the children of Judah. In 2 Chronicles 36, verse 20, we read, he carried away to Babylon, where they were servants to him and his sons. And notice it there, verse 20, until the reign of the kingdom of Persia. When the Persians would take over the Babylonians and rule the then known world, this would spell better days for the children of Israel. Now you find the first king of Persia, as Persia grew in influence, it was the king named Cyrus. And as he ascended the throne of Persia and began to build his empire, you read in 2 Chronicles 36 and verse 22 that this pagan king, he did something very interesting. We're told there that the Lord stirred up his spirit and he then made a decree allowing the Jews to return to their homeland from Babylon. In other words, this pagan king, King Cyrus, God specifically came to this king, a pagan king, certainly not a Christian, and he stirred him up and essentially told him to pass a decree allowing the children of Judah to return home to rebuild the house of God there and to rebuild the city as well. Now, as the children of Judah made their journey home from Babylon back to Jerusalem and to Judah, it didn't all just happen at once. It actually happened in three long stages. And these stages, they were known really as the second Exodus. You remember, of course, in the book of Exodus, it's all about the children of Israel leaving Egypt and going eventually to Canaan. Well, here we have the second Exodus of the Bible. The children of Judah leaving Babylon and heading back to Jerusalem, their home city. Now this, as I said, it happened in three stages. And it actually happened over many, many years. The first stage, it happened under a man named Zerubbabel. And he led them to rebuild the house of God, which had been destroyed by King Nebuchadnezzar. And so we find Zerubbabel, he really helped build the house of God. That was really his ministry. The second group of Jews, they then returned 75 years after the first group with Zerubbabel, and they returned under Ezra. Of course, you read the next book of the Bible is Ezra, and that's all about how Ezra, how he developed the house of God. Ezra was a scribe of the law. He was a priest. And so really there, whilst the temple was built under Zerubbabel, it was instituted and developed under the leadership of Ezra. Then another 13 years, some 90 years in total, after the first group under Zerubbabel, Nehemiah, who we're learning about in this book, he led the third group of returners back to Jerusalem. And as he led this third group of returners, Ezra was still there. So as you read through the book of Nehemiah and also the book of Ezra, you find that some of them, they interchange. And Ezra and Nehemiah, they were really contemporaries. Ezra, you find he was developing the house of God. And Nehemiah, he was building the walls around Jerusalem. You see, remember this. The whole city was leveled. And then the house of God was built. And then the majority of the children of Judah had returned under the first group with Zerubbabel and the second group under Ezra. So the house of God was built, but the walls, they were still left in ruins. And so the enemy, they could essentially walk in the front door. Yes, they had moved, they had made that long move back home to Jerusalem. And yes, they had rebuilt the house of God. And they had even rebuilt their homes. But work still needed to be done. The walls that fortified this glorious city, the city of Jerusalem, they still needed rebuilt. And so Nehemiah here, we find he led the children of Israel. He led a group to return. And eventually he led the children of Israel. And he led them in rebuilding the walls of Jerusalem. And as well as needing his scribes in of the word of God, God needs his Nehemiah to rebuild his walls. Oh yes, God, he raises up priests, as it were, those who will work in the house of God. He raises up the scribes like Ezra, those who will teach the word of God. But he also raises up Nehemiahs, those who will roll up their sleeves, those who will get out their trowel and their shovel, and those who will dig deep and dig through the rubble that has been broken down, and those who will rebuild the walls. God is looking for Nehemiahs today. He is looking for Nehemiahs from amongst this congregation. And I wonder, does he find any Nehemiahs? I wonder, like Nehemiah, will you give yourself willingly? Will you offer yourself willingly to rebuild the walls, just as we find him doing here? You remember how King David had that desire to build a house of God. But God came to him and didn't allow him. David then, he did the next best thing. He knew that Solomon, his son, was set up for the task of building the first temple. And he gathered together the princes and the other leaders to assist Solomon. And as he gathered them leaders together, we read in 1 Chronicles 22, verse 19, "Arise and build ye the sanctuary of the Lord, to bring the ark of the covenant of the Lord and the holy vessels of God into the house that is to be built to the name of the Lord." And he told the leaders there, as he also spoke to his son, Solomon, he said to them, "Arise and build. Rise up and build the house of God." You see, as well as needing his foremen in the church, God requires his bricklayers in the church. He requires those who will arise and, like Nehemiah, will set stones in the wall. He needs the Nehemiahs who will come and rebuild the walls. And I wonder this morning, have you that burden? Have you that passion? Have you that compassion? Will you, like Nehemiah, rise up? And will you set stones in the wall? Oh God, he needs Nehemiahs. He needs his bricklayers. And I wonder, will you be a bricklayer for the Lord? And so I want us to think this morning, really, I want to set the scene about Nehemiah. What type of a man was he? How did God prepare and shape his life? And I want to consider under this first study the subject of Nehemiah, the man for the hour. Nehemiah, the man for the hour. Notice firstly here the preparation of Nehemiah. The preparation of Nehemiah. Verse 1, We read it was in the 20th year. This launches us into the 20th year of the Persian king, King Artaxerxes. As I said, some 90 years have now passed from the first Persian king, King Cyrus, was stirred up and allowed the children of Israel to return to their homeland. And after King Cyrus, there were four kings that ruled Persia after him. The last one before King Artaxerxes here was King Ahasuerus. And of course, you remember, he was the king during the Book of Esther. But now we find we are now into the fifth Persian king, King Artaxerxes, and we're in his 20th year of his reign. And here we find Nehemiah. Nehemiah, of all people, he's a cupbearer to the king. He is essentially a right-hand man to the king in Persia. And in thinking about Nehemiah here, as he is a cupbearer for the king in this palace in Persia, notice two things, how God prepared him. Notice his locality. His locality. Verse 1, we read the words of Nehemiah, the son of Hakaliah. In this first verse, we're introduced to the individual Nehemiah. Now, as you read that, you don't really find an awful lot about the man of Nehemiah mentioned here. Verse 1 just says, Nehemiah, the son of Hakaliah. But we're also told here that he was in Shushan, the palace. And that lets us know that Nehemiah lived in Persia. He lived in Persia. He didn't go back to Jerusalem with the other captives, the first two groups. No, him and his parents, they stayed in Babylon. So they stayed in Babylon under the rule of King Nebuchadnezzar, or Persia rather. They were there in Persia during the reign of King Artaxerxes. And here we find Nehemiah's father. He calls him Nehemiah. Now, Nehemiah means God comforts. God comforts. And this tells us much about the background and the upbringing of Nehemiah. It tells us that he had parents, Hakaliah, here. He obviously had this belief that yes, they were in Persia. Yes, they were in a dark place. But they believed that God would order circumstances. God would comfort them by bringing them back to their promised land. They believed that one day God would fulfill his promise. So here's Nehemiah, and his father calls him God Comforts. It shows that Nehemiah's parents, they trusted the Lord. Yes, they were in Persia, and the majority of people had gone back home, but they believed that God would order circumstances and to enable them to go back home and rebuild the house of God. And here we find God providentially saw that Nehemiah, a Jew, Nehemiah was a Jew, was the right-hand man to the very king of Persia. He was a cupbearer in the palace in Shushan. And in his difficult and strange locality, God was shaping, God was molding, God was forming the life of Nehemiah to be a builder in his occupation as a cupbearer to the king. And whilst your location may be problematical, it is very providential. Oh, like Nehemiah, you may find the place that God has placed you strange. Maybe you think you should be somewhere easier. Maybe you think that the place that you live, the place that you work, the place that you study is very difficult. You can't understand why God has placed you there. But just like Nehemiah, God is forming your life. God is developing your character. He is shaping and molding you to be a builder in or of his walls. You think of Moses. Moses was raised in the palace of Pharaoh. He was trained in the ways of Egypt. Yet we find that he spent, after 40 years of being in Egypt, he spent a further 40 years in the wilderness looking after his father-in-law's sheep. And there in the solitude, there as he looked after his father-in-law's sheep, God was beginning to form Moses. God was beginning to shape Moses so that with the last 40 years of his life, he learned what God could do with him. And as well as observing your circumstances, Remember that God has ordered your circumstances. That place that you find difficult, that place that you can't understand why God has placed you there. Remember, God has orchestrated. God has ordained even the small print of your life. Do you find it hard? Do you find it tough? Perhaps you find certain aspects of your life difficult to understand. Well, humanly speaking, Nehemiah should have been back home already. He should have been in Jerusalem. But the Lord had planned that he would be in Persia and that he would be the king's cupbearer. Oh, the Lord is forming a way, shaping a way at his character through the place that he lived. Charles Swindoll is a respected Bible teacher and author in America. And I must say that whilst I don't agree with him on everything, on Bible versions, on Bible doctrine, yet I still respect him as a man of God. He has been used for many, many years in various churches and also various seminaries. But as you read through his books, you find that he often refers back to his experiences as a Marine. You see, as a young man, he spent a couple of years serving in the Marines. And he would often say in his books that experience of being in the Marines, it made him the man, it taught him the lessons that he needed to learn for his ministry. God was shaping and forming his character even before, long before he entered the ministry. And here's what's happening with Nehemiah. God has him there in the palace. And the Lord's dealing with him, the Lord's shaping him. His locality. Notice also here, thinking about his preparation, notice his reliability. Reliability. Verse 1, we read in the 20th year, as I was in Shushan the palace. Verse 11 also tells us, the end of the verse, I was the king's cupbearer. Nehemiah was providentially positioned in the palace in Persia. He was in Shushan, in the palace, many miles from Jerusalem. But as he was in Persia, and God had it that he would stay in Persia, God promoted him to one of the most prestigious jobs and occupations in the country. He was the king's cupbearer. Now, when you read the English cupbearer, immediately you think that he carried cups or dishes. But that is not what Nehemiah did. No, he had a far more important job than that. You see, in Bible times, the cupbearer, really he was the king's confidant. He was the person who the king asked advice for. He was the person who the king bounced certain ideas off. He also had an important job because whenever they brought the king's wine and the king's food before the king, the cupbearer would taste that food firstly to see if there was any poison in it. And then he would pass on the good or the bad news to the king. So he had to be very reliable. The king had to trust Nehemiah with everything. Nehemiah had more influence in the king than even the king's own family members. But Nehemiah was in a strange place, a difficult place, a dark place. And yet Nehemiah was elevated. Why? Because the king could trust him. Because he was a reliable person. Because he was a person he could depend upon. And whilst you may be in a strange locality, the Lord still desires that you possess reliability. Oh yes, you might find it hard. You might find that place difficult. You can't understand why God has you there, as I have been saying. But God still wants you to be reliable. He wants you to be trustworthy in those things that he has given you to do. Because in setting you in that place, God is shaping you. He's forming you to be the best builder that you can possibly be. He is preparing you to see if you're reliable there. You remember Joseph? Joseph was imprisoned for retaining his integrity. He was imprisoned really for doing nothing wrong. And it's easy to forget, but Joseph would have spent a long time in prison. It wasn't just months, it was actually years. But even in prison, Joseph didn't get bitter and he didn't get angry. No, we read in Genesis 39, verse 22, that the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hands all the prisoners that were in the prison, and whatsoever they did there, he was the doer of it. And here we find, even in prison, Joseph, he was promoted, a little bit like Nehemiah. And it seems that he was faithful and reliable there because they did exactly as he told them. You see, rather than being cynical in your circumstances, God is looking for you to be loyal in your circumstances. Although you can't understand what God is doing or why God is doing it, God wants you to be loyal, faithful, dependable, reliable to him. Oh, he's looking for you to honor him, for you to honor him in your employment. And often God places you in a difficult place to refine you and to test your reliability. F.B. Meyer said, "Don't waste your time waiting for large opportunities which may never come, but faithfully handle the little things that are always claiming your attention." And that is so true. So often we complain about the things that God sets before us to do. We're waiting for something bigger. And really the Lord's asking us to be reliable and asking us to be faithful where he has placed us. The preparation of Nehemiah. Nehemiah, he's in the palace and he's a cupbearer to the king. But notice secondly here, the question of Nehemiah. In verse 2, we find he asks a question. He was in the palace. He was a Jew. He had returned. And we find that as he was in the palace, certain Jews came, and they came to him all the way from Jerusalem. And as they came to him, Nehemiah asked a question. He asked a question concerning Jerusalem. And notice here two things about this question. Notice the concern he possessed. The concern he possessed. Verse 2, the second part of the verse. "I asked them concerning the Jews that had escaped, which were left of the captivity, and concerning Jerusalem." You know, it has been said that a Jew never completely forgets Jerusalem. And that was certainly true of Nehemiah. Nehemiah, as soon as Hananiah and these other brethren came to him in the palace, Nehemiah's first concern was Jerusalem. I imagine him coming to them, and yes, we're given what he said, but really the tone of it is what's happening in Jerusalem? What's happening there? Yes, I know you've built the temple, but what about the walls? What's happening in Jerusalem? How are you getting on? How are my people doing? How are the Lord's people? Are they prospering? Are they finding it difficult? And so he asked about the people, but he also asked about the place. Verse 2 tells us he asked concerning Jerusalem. And here he was really asking. Really the crux of the matter was, I believe, he was asking about the walls. He was asking, are those walls, are they still built yet, Hanani? Are they still built, or are they still a pile of rubbish? You see, he was concerned for the state of the work of God in Jerusalem. And rather than being unconcerned about the work, you're to be concerned about the work. Like Nehemiah, you're to possess that concern about the state of the work of God. Oh, as Nehemiah took his chance, as he was confronted by his fellow countrymen, and he asked, what about the walls? What about Jerusalem? What about them? I wonder, do you have that concern? I wonder, do you have that interest in the work of God? Do you look around and do you see the need for the walls to be rebuilt again? Nehemiah was miles and miles away, hundreds of miles away. And he had a very, very comfortable life in the palace. But that was his concern. He wanted to know how the work of God was doing. Indeed, in Acts 15, verse 36, we find Paul, he's about to start his second missionary journey. And we read there, "Some days after, Paul said unto Barnabas, let us go again and visit our brethren in every city where we have preached the word of the Lord and see how they do." And Paul had a desire to go beyond where he had been on his first missionary journeys. But he said to Barnabas, "Barnabas, before we conquer new ground, Barnabas, let's go back and visit the churches we've already established." And why did he want to go? He said at the end of that verse, "and see how they do." He was concerned. He was concerned for the state of the work of God there. And as opposed to wearing spiritual sunglasses, We need to wear spiritual eyeglasses. We need to see clearly the need that is before us. Have you that concern? Look around and do you see the great need? The great need that there is for a builder. For many builders to, as it were, set stones in the wall. You know, Mrs. Jones, she always went to the post office in her town because she found the employees there were very friendly. One day she went in, it was just before Christmas, and she wanted to buy some stamps to send off her Christmas cards. When she got into the post office, she found that the line was very, very long, and she had waited there for quite a while. And then there was another employee came and said, you know, Mrs. Jones, you don't have to wait in the line. You can go to the machine, there are stamps there, you can just put your money in and buy how many stamps you need. And she said, yes, I know. I know all about the machine. I even know how to work the machine. But you know, the machine doesn't ask me about my arthritis. She loved the fact there were people concerned for her. And oh, have you that concern? Have you that concern about the work of God? Like Nehemiah, although you may be many, many miles, as it were, or although you may be a great distance from the need, one of you still got that concern. Still got that concern. Concern for the work of God. The concern that he possessed. And notice also here the person he addressed. The person he addressed, verse 2. We read, Hanani, one of my brethren, came, he and certain men of Judah, and I asked them concerning the Jews that had escaped. In chapter 7, verse 2, we read this man, Hanani, was actually the blood brother of Nehemiah. And evidently, he had already returned to Jerusalem. He had returned under the second group with Ezra 13 years previously. But for some reason, Hanani felt the need to come back to Persia and to speak with his brother and to ask him about, or for Nehemiah to then ask him about the conditions. Now, we can't be sure exactly as to why they came, but we can be sure is that they came. What I want you to really see here is that they had first-hand experience of the situation. Hanani was there on the ground. He had seen it all for himself. He had seen the fact that the house of God was now built, but he also would have seen the fact that the walls, they hadn't been touched. And he handled the facts. He simply told Nehemiah what conditions were really like. He didn't tell Nehemiah, his brother, what he thought Nehemiah wanted to hear. He didn't tell Nehemiah what he dreamed Jerusalem would be like. He simply observed the facts and stated exactly what was happening in Jerusalem. And as well as having a passion for the work of God, you need to also have perception in the work of God. You need to look at conditions and see them not as how you would like them to be, but as they really are. Oh, in the work of God, in this work of rebuilding, it needs people who are able to assess the situation and not get too caught up in romantic ideals at what it's actually, what they would like it to be like, and actually see it for what it is. See the obstacles, see the hurdles. See the fact that there is an awful lot of work that needs to be done. God is looking for those type of builders. Those builders who will see through the rubble and see through the difficulties and understand what needs to be done. Indeed, in Mark 8, there was a blind man brought to Christ. He was by the pool of Bethsaida. And here we find Christ, he took the blind man out of the town. And he then did something interesting. Christ, he spat on the ground. He then took that spittle and he rubbed it on that man's eyes. And whilst the man could see partially, he couldn't see fully. He said he saw men as trees walking. Then Christ did the same thing again. And we read in Mark 8, verse 25, after that he put his hands again upon his eyes and made him look up, he was restored and saw every man clearly. Underline the word there, clearly. He could see clearly. And in the work of God, that's the type of eyesight we need. We need those who will see clearly. Those who have that clear vision, that clear perception. about what needs to be done. Oh, have you that perception? Like Hananiah here, he didn't butter up the facts. He just told his brother exactly what was happening. Have you that clear perception, that clear vision, that realism that you don't gloss over the facts, that or gloss over them, but you just see the work that needs to be done? This is exactly what was happening here. So we've had the preparation of Nehemiah and the question of Nehemiah. But in verse 3 here, I want you to notice lastly the information to Nehemiah. The information to Nehemiah. We have really the answer of Hananiah and these other brethren to Nehemiah. We read verse 3, they said unto me, the remnant that are left of the captivity there in the province are in great affliction and reproach. The word affliction here, it's a very picturesque word. It's used for of something sharp or cutting or piercing. And here we find the people of God. They were already back in Jerusalem, the vast majority of them. And they were being cut to pieces. They were in great affliction in the sense that the enemy were cutting them to pieces through their verbal attacks. The enemies of God had been putting tremendous pressure on the people of God. Remember, as I said, the house was rebuilt already. The house of God. People had already established their homes. But the walls, they were still in rubble. And we find the enemies, they simply walked in the front door. And they had great joy in deriding the people of God. Now, the fact that the enemy had such joy also spoke of the inactivity of God's people. Because they had returned for really over 90 years now. And really, when you think about it, there had been a couple of generations that had grown up in Jerusalem, had settled there. But they had been there for such a long time. But the walls still weren't rebuilt. And this would have been a terrible testimony, both to the people, but also, more importantly, to God. And this is why Nehemiah said in chapter 2, verse 17, come, let us build up the wall of Jerusalem, that we be no more a reproach. And so Nehemiah here, he was informed about the activity of the enemy, but it also spoke to him about the inactivity of the people. You see, when God's people are inactive, the enemy becomes very active. And as you look around, surely you must see the similarities. The rise of modernism, the rise of Catholicism, the rise of false religion, the demise of Christendom as we know it. Surely does it not speak to us about the activity of the enemy? The fact that they have been, as it were, walking through the front door, and they have been a reproach to the house of God, and that this information that Nehemiah was given, this is the information that we need to take on board and to digest. Oh, that we would say like Nehemiah, that we might come and that we would go and build up the wall, that we be no more a reproach. Nehemiah, the man for the hour. He was very, very far away from Jerusalem. Humanly speaking, he should have been there. He should have already returned by now. But God had him there. God was forming and shaping his life. But while he was there, he had that concern for the state of Jerusalem. Let us, like Nehemiah, rise to the challenge. Let us be builders. Let us be bricklayers. As we see the walls broken down and the gates burned with fire. May God bless his word to your hearts and lives this morning.